I suspect I could be wrong, but I just wonder, you know, from the children's moment to the gospel story, if any of that, the connection is obvious. I suspect it isn't. Ray thinks it's obvious. God bless you, Ray. Thank you. Okay, well, they were all... and then the Transfiguration story itself is a little odd. My experience, evangelicals, ministers really struggle to know what to do with this. Well, what's the application? Okay, Jesus was shining like a light bulb. Go do the same. What am I supposed to do with this? Of all the events in the Gospels, there are two that baffle the disciples. And they're almost at a loss for words. They are at a loss for words. They're not even able to interact with what they're seeing. They don't have words for it. They don't have any way of making sense of what they're seeing. The Transfiguration and the Resurrection. These are just something they were not expecting, something they'd never seen before, something that wasn't really clear what was ever going to happen. The cross is something they object about. The cross they argue about, but at least they understand what Jesus is talking about when he says that I must go to Jerusalem and there I'll be crucified. And Peter can argue with him about it. He has words for this. But the Transfiguration, they are baffled and dumbstruck. And not just them, us too. Credulity is being stretched to the utmost, and we are uncertain about what is going on here. At the very least, let us remember at least three things, if we can. That this event teaches us to look at Jesus. We could use the word contemplation. That we would spend our lives in prayer and in our singing, in our service, somehow at the same time, in the midst of doing everything, to be thinking about Jesus, and to even take moments in our lives where we're just alone and thinking about Jesus. This is what this story is trying to get us to do. It is also teaching us at the same time, not just about Jesus and who he is, but what it means to really be human. And truly human. And this story connects all of what I've said to Jesus' death and resurrection and our death and resurrection. The disciples function in the Gospels kind of like, and I've said this before, forgive me, but kind of like the sidekick of a detective. When you're reading or a mystery or watching a mystery. So you know the genius detective solves everything and says, aha, the butler did it. Now, that's the question throughout the whole movie and the whole book. So once the detective says, it was the butler, you would think we would just, it's over. But we're all doing the same thing as the sidekick. Whoa, 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 whoa. The butler? How do you know that? That doesn't make any sense. So thank goodness for the sidekick, because then the detective says, oh, you didn't figure that out? Oh, well, let me explain it all to you. And then we, thanks to the sidekick, we all go, oh, that's how the butler did it. Okay, I get it. No, none of us might, otherwise, if it wasn't for that sidekick, the rest of us would be all sort of too proud to say anything. We'd be like, oh yeah, the butler. Yeah, I had that, I knew that right from the beginning, I knew that. And we don't want to be the ones to say, I have no idea what you're talking about. The disciples in the Gospels function that way for us as well. Jesus says something, and the disciples say, bless them. I don't get it. Now, we're reading it, and we're thinking, I don't get it either, but I don't want to be the one to put my hand up. So they say it for us. And in this event, Luke adds, Peter doesn't even know what he's saying here. He's so baffled by what he sees. This is just beyond anything he's ever imagined could happen. And he doesn't really understand it. None of them do. But Peter at least speaks up. I'll make three tents. One for you and Moses and Elijah. And, you know, but he doesn't know what he's talking about. In their confusion, God addresses the disciples. And through them, he addresses us. This is my son. Listen to him. You may not understand right now what's going on. This may not make any sense. This may be overwhelming and confusing. But remember this. Listen to my son. Look at him. Contemplate him. But what is it that we are seeing? We have so many symbols of power and glory and honor that we would recognize. So, you know, a Corvette or some, I don't know, a Lamborghini pulls up in front of our church, a gold one, and someone steps out in tailored clothes. We get it. Wow. Well, some of us anyway will say, wow. Others of us will show off. Somebody we see in Parliament standing up at the throne, we get it. I know what that means. Someone who has attendants, servants, people that they pay to do this and that and is able to tell them, give them instructions. We see a person like that giving orders, we get it. Okay. Expensive clothes, jewelry. Someone who's able to have a busy itinerary because they're flying all over the place. I'll see if I can pencil you in. We understand the honor and the glory and the power represented in those symbols. But what exactly is a person who is suddenly shining like the sun? I don't think we have an answer. I don't think anyone has ever answered this in church theology. All we're left with is the invitation to contemplate Jesus, to look at him, to listen to him. What we are at least seeing is Jesus' divine nature. This is my son. Jesus, perhaps his rightness with God or his righteousness. Moses' face shone briefly after he spoke with God. Perhaps it's something like that. But it remains an otherworldly beauty, an otherworldly power and glory, authority and beauty beyond what we even have words to capture here at the moment. And in our prayers and singing, in our discussion around Jesus and the Bible, in our reading of the Bible, I think we act very familiar with Jesus, as if he were our friend and our brother, dare I say, our equal. I think there is a place for that. I think that is what Jesus said. I have called you my friends. But at the same time, this is a reminder that Jesus' glory, his divine nature, when we see it, can reduce us to having no words, being dumbstruck and confused. The story, though, ends with this memorable phrase: Peter, James, and John, the cloud disappeared, Moses and Elijah disappeared, Jesus wasn't shining anymore, and they only saw Jesus. Now, I think what's going on here is that they went from this experience and they had that in their minds. They only saw Jesus. And all the things that were transpiring and that would transpire as they walked towards the cross, they had this picture of Jesus in their minds. They loved him. They knew his glory and they were going to follow him. Now, they lost their courage at the last moment. But when he was resurrected, they connected the two events. And they never faltered again. The love of Jesus compelled them to give up even their own lives, to face a death that they did not want, but they did it because they had their eyes fixed on Jesus. They saw only Jesus. This is the message for us as well. If only we would keep Jesus in our eyes and in our minds, if only we will listen to him and follow him, having this picture of his transfiguration and his resurrection glory. I don't want to suggest that I have seen Jesus shining in this way, and I continue to fail. I continue to let other things become vie in importance with that glory. But this is the invitation to know Jesus in this way. Matthew Henry in his commentary says this, puts it this way: those who would have a transforming fellowship with God must not just retire from the world, but ascend.
Lift up your hearts. Seek the things above. The call is, come up hither. But it is not just Jesus' divinity being revealed, but I would argue, and as many as everyone in church history has argued, what we see here is humanity transformed. The first true human being revealed to other people's eyes. Jesus is fully human, standing at his side are Moses and Elijah, two other human beings. This is telling us something about what it means to be truly human. And we'll turn to the wisdom of Star Wars for the few of you that this might reach. And in it, the hero, Luke Skywalker, is trying to find his way in life. And so he reaches out for this ancient wisdom warrior who's full of wisdom, Yoda. And Yoda takes Luke under his wing and is training him to become the hero that is needed. And at some point, Yoda gets it right and wrong. And he says, human beings are not this crude matter. Luminous beings are we. Well, Yoda has got it right. We are luminous beings. That is what we see in Jesus. This is what humanity was meant to be. Glorious and shining and beautiful and worthy of honor. What he doesn't get right is that he says, we are not this crude matter. No. No. We are this crude matter, but transformed. As Ron put it in his poem that Marilyn sang, flesh and bones, weakness and sin, transformed. Jesus was, after all, conceived in the womb of Mary. He was physically born and all of what that would have entailed. He was raised. He grew up as we did. He knew, as every human does, what it means to be hungry, what it means to be short of breath, to feel weak, to feel your body aging, to know pain and longing. He was fully human. And yet here, that crude matter in this story transformed. The human being is transformed. Jesus said the disciples had had a vision. That is what he called what they saw, a vision. Arguably a vision of the resurrection. The work of God complete in one human being, in Jesus. The word in Greek is metamorphosed. What we see is this, the crude material, flesh and blood, humanness, human life, is the source material for the transformation that takes place. It's like a butterfly. When it metamorphoses from a caterpillar into a winged creature in its cocoon, everything that is needed for that transformation is there in the caterpillar. And the work of God takes place. Paul, in 1 Corinthians 15, says it's like a seed. Our bodies are like a seed planted in the ground and upsprouts the new life. All the genetic information, all the energy needed for the plant is packed into that tiny seed. All we do is put it in the ground and life comes up. It's all there. All the power and glory of the plant is there in the seed. This is not, there is a deep connection, therefore, between how we live and the transformed lives that will be revealed when we see Jesus face to face. We are tempted to fall into an old heresy that when we die, we go off to some other existence, that this crude matter material is dropped away, and as ghosts, as spirits and souls, we go somewhere else into some other land and realm. Or as sometimes I've heard said, we become angels. Now, these are all heresies rejected in Scripture and throughout the church. No, we are resurrected. Our bodies are transformed. Perhaps we are uncomfortable with this idea. Perhaps we doubt life really matters when everything's going on. What's the point in carrying on? What's the point to my life now? Everything is about to go wrong for the disciples. Jesus is giving them a reason to keep carrying on. But perhaps sometimes we fear that this life will matter, that all the stuff we're doing with our life is a part of what's being carried on into the next world. And actually, it would be quite a relief if it could just all be forgotten, if it could all be put away and we could go somewhere else instead of these bodies that we've done so many things that we shouldn't have being brought back to life. This is why we need the cross. This is why we need God's grace. Every careless word is what Jesus says we will be held accountable for. We need the cross because this life does matter, right to the choices we make before we die. It becomes the genetic material. It becomes the energy that out of which comes a new life, thanks to God's work. But it's in the hands of our God who forgives through Jesus Christ all the things that we've done wrong, and there are many for each of us. We heard read for us from the letter of 2 Peter, where Peter says, you know, we weren't just making up these stories. We saw Jesus transformed on the mountain. But he begins that passage by saying, since. And you think, well, what's he talking? We have to go back to see what was he saying that led up to the story of the transfiguration? And Peter connects how we live in this life to the transformation that happened in Jesus. This life matters because you are being transformed, and it matters. Peter wrote this in his letter before he talked about the transfiguration. God's divine power has given us everything we need for life and godliness because we know Jesus, who has called us by his own glory and goodness. Everything we need because we can know Jesus. And thus, he has given us through these things very precious and great promises, so that through the faith in these promises, we might escape the corruption that is in this world because of lust, and that we might become participants in the divine nature. This is the call of humanity, to know Jesus, to hear the invitation, and to take part in that glory that was revealed in Jesus. For this reason, make every effort to support your faith with goodness, and goodness with knowledge, knowledge with self-control, self-control with endurance, endurance with godliness, godliness with mutual affection with love. For if these things are yours and are increasing among y'all, all of you, they keep you from being ineffective and unfruitful in knowing Jesus. Because we did not follow myths when we told you about the glory we saw on the mountain. There is a deep connection between this life and the glory that is coming. But Jesus connects this transformation to death and resurrection for himself and therefore for us as well. Preceded by this story is the warning that the road to the cross is approaching. The transfiguration is the turning point in the Gospels, and Jesus headed straight towards the cross after this event. All the commentaries throughout history are unanimous. The disciples are given this vision of Jesus before entering the suffering and the tragedy, before watching Jesus die in shame, in weakness, and helplessness, so that they might have courage to face their own death. They must have asked, what's the point? And isn't that what we ask of our lives in the midst of tragedy, and especially as we age? In hindsight, the disciples saw the strong connection between the transfiguration and the resurrection, and they have given us this vision as well, so that when we look at our own death, and not just the moment of death, actually, because that's not that bad, it's all the stuff that might come before it. And when we say, I'm scared, I don't want it to be this way, that we might have courage as well, knowing that this is the way to glory. The pain, the hardship that you will face is the means of you coming to glory in Jesus. It's not for nothing. It's not pointless. The point in life is not just all the accomplishments we make, but the transformation occurring in our hearts as we become like Jesus. This is the vision the disciples had been given so that they would have the courage to follow Jesus to the end of their lives. And this is our calling, to take up our cross, to follow Jesus. The resurrection is coming. And by God's grace alone, I might see you one day on that day in glory, transformed and shining. I'm not sure even then I'll have the words for it. As I look at each one of you, beautiful and shining, transfigured, metamorphosed, I haven't lived well even to this day, but this is the invitation to us. Look at Jesus. Get to know his love and his grace so that you might trust him and have the courage, in spite of the shame, in spite of the weakness, to keep going. And one day you will see him face to face, and you will be made like him. Amen.